tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 6th of July, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. I'm actually pre-recording this as I am unable to get into the studio today, so what we'll be doing is we'll be looking at some more quotes from the book The Unknown Warriors by Nicholas Pringle. This book is basically, he asked the remains of the people that were still alive after World War II what they thought of Britain today. This book was written about 20 years ago at the time of the Tony Blair government, and there were still quite a lot of people that were alive and actually fought in the war, and the public were quite surprised at what these people had to say about the country today. Most of them were absolutely disgusted at the way they'd been treated, where they weren't getting enough for their pensions, but also they were absolutely disgusted at the fact that the country had decided to import all these people from all over the world when they had been fighting to prevent the country from being taken over by foreigners. Or that's what they thought they were fighting for. They're told today that they were fighting against Nazism and fighting for democracy. What they were actually fighting for is to prevent the country being taken over by Germans, foreigners. And the majority of them, what they were most concerned about in modern Britain was that the country had been taken over by foreigners anyway. And what they mean by that is that the country had been flooded with people from all over the world by the post-war governments. And I'm not going to go through every one of them. What I've done is I've selected some of the most interesting ones, and we'll read from them. And then we'll make some comments on them. 60 years on, and we have another government that calls itself Labour, but is busy continuing Thatcherite Tory policies of privatising public services, undermining local government, promoting greater inequality of incomes and wealth, and worst of all, sending our armed forces into illegal, immoral, and unwinnable wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Wars instigated by the United States for oil and power. Bear in mind, this is 20 years ago. Got the same problem today, haven't we? We've got the United States going into Iran, another illegal, immoral, and unwinnable war. These wars have continued ever since the end of World War II. We were told that was going to be the end of it all, no more wars, but they've continued, haven't they? Yes, most people have a higher standard of living, but what of the quality of life? Though a majority alive today didn't experience our wartime hopes for a better future, I am convinced that unsatisfied expectations lie at the root of today's social malaise. The growing consumption of drugs, both illegal and prescribed ones, binge drinking, violence, vandalism on the streets, hatred of dull and pointless jobs, fear of strangers, and the rest. I believe their apparent cynicism and selfishness. Many people, perhaps most, have that same yearning we had during the war for a world of greater equality, security and opportunity, where we can all respect each other without reserve. So just in the short time that he'd been here in Britain, in his lifetime, that's the changes that he had seen. Suddenly violence and vandalism on the streets, drinking, drug taking, dull and pointless jobs, fear of strangers. And all of this had come about since the end of the Second World War. And a lot of it, I think, can be put down to multiculturalism, fear of strangers. When you have different ethnic groups living together, all in one area. Studies have found that you don't just get fearful of the different ethnic group that's in your area. People no longer trust their own ethnic group. And I mean, there's good reasons for that, because it could be that your own ethnic group is conspiring with the other ethnic group and forming alliances with the other ethnic group against yourself. That's a evolutionary psychology reason for this, why in multicultural areas people don't even trust their own people anymore. And you have to have a high trust society to have the society that we were used to having in Britain, the society that didn't include violence and drug taking and fear of strangers. You only have a society like that if you have a high trust society. And you can only have a high trust society if you have an ethnically homogenous society. Let's have a look at another quote here. Dear sir, you ask, what do I think of my country at present? My answer is that I don't think I have a country to call mine anymore. My father was a soldier in the First World War. I myself a soldier in the Second World War. In both instances, the reason we were told was to defend our freedom and our way of life against the forces of evil. In both instances, as you will know, we were successful in combat, and our glorious leaders were, at that time, very pleased, and we were wonderful people. They were correct in that the people and the men I served with were wonderful people. Of that, there is no doubt at all. And he says here, they were told that they were defending their freedom and their way of life. Not defending, protecting democracy, defending their freedom and their way of life. And by freedom, they thought that they were going to be taken over by the Germans and they would be ruled by the Germans. That's what they meant by freedom. However, as in any society, there are people who have positions to their advantage so as to gain an audience and promote their own ideals. Many of these people are our politicians, who joined on the bandwagon to curry favour amongst the liberal-minded. This attitude has gathered pace over the years, and the consequences are being felt all over the country, with young people causing problems in many places, and unruly schoolchildren creating problems, knowing that there is no means of using discipline without infringing their human rights or being charged with assault. Give them an inch and they will take a mile, springs to mind. Now, we're told that using discipline against children, physical discipline, we're told that that's a bad thing and that has bad results. But all our traditions said spare the rod and spoil the child. And traditionally, it was accepted that if children were badly behaved, they should be beaten and then they won't be badly behaved again. Of course, we look at that today and say, oh, that's awful. Look at the poor child. And they'll show studies and they'll say, look, we can look at this study here and we can see that the end result of children having corporal punishment is a negative one. But after listening to Professor Edward Dutton, he points out that those studies were flawed. And if you control for mental illness, then you find that corporal punishment actually improves the life outcomes for the person that are involved. Because if you get mad people or neurotic people, people with mental instability, and they beat their children, that's not actually going to help. And the children are also going to be mentally unstable anyway, because genetically they will be predisposed to it. So if you remove the mentally ill people from the studies which have been done on corporal punishment, you will see that actually corporal punishment is a positive. Continuing. In the meantime, the evil we fought against and lost so many good young men to maintain our so-called freedom has been betrayed by our political leaders, who have allowed what used to be my country to be invaded by millions of immigrants. And not content with that, they also changed our laws to accommodate them. Well, they have to, because diversity is so unnatural. The only way you can have a semblance of functionality and a semblance of equality is if you change the laws, you prevent people from being able to complain about it, prevent people from being able to criticise it, prevent people from employing the people that they want by forcing people to employ people that they know aren't actually going to be any good for their company, but they have to employ them. Because otherwise it will look as if they're being racist and they're only employing white people. All sorts of things like that. have to be done to give this a semblance of a functional society. And in actual fact, it's incredibly dysfunctional. The politicians brag that we have free speech. This is nonsense. We only have free speech so long as what we say they agree to, especially if it regards immigrants or their descendants. And that's very interesting that he can see this, because, as I say, this is 20 years ago. And he's saying we only have the free speech to repeat what they tell us. We're not allowed to come out with our own opinions. These people have to be called Britons, the liberal-minded insist. We can't even be English anymore. It's not even on the census form. I myself register as any other nationality. So what he's pointing to there is the fact that they give people of foreign ancestry, they give them a British passport and tell them that they're British. And in actual fact, they're not British. They just have a British passport. They might be Somalian, or they might be Ghanaian, or they might be Pakistani, and they have a British passport. That's all. They are not actually British people. These same people, not many years ago, at the time of trouble in Africa, were telling me that Africa was for Africans and the white man should not be there. I totally agree with that philosophy. It does, however, cut both ways. And to me, a black or brown person or any other immigrant is someone who resides in what was my country. They are not British. Had I been born in China of English parents, I most certainly would not have been Chinese. So you can see these elderly people, these seniors from 20 years ago, they're saying things, same things that we are saying today. As I said earlier, my father and uncles and myself were soldiers during the World Wars and won our so-called freedom. It seems we kept out so-called evil regimes so as to allow England to be given away by people in positions of power who didn't even consider asking those wonderful people who, through their bravery and stoicism, made it possible for them to sit in judgment of what, in their opinion, was best suited to keep them in the lofty positions they find themselves. So he feels absolutely betrayed. I mean, he and his friends laid down their lives for the country, and they were not even asked whether they wanted to allow in foreigners, effectively, into the country and make them citizens. And they see this as a great betrayal. I travelled through France, Belgium, Holland and into Germany. Some of the people lined the roads and waved us through. Many more didn't, and so long as the war passed them by, they were unconcerned. This begs the question, why did we win and then give our own country away and then change our laws to accommodate them? And this is the big question, isn't it? If we won the Second World War, why does our country look the way that it does now? Well, I think you have to admit that we didn't actually win the Second World War. When you look at what the language that they use, and they talk about victory in Europe Day, they don't talk about victory for Europe, a victory in Europe. It wasn't a victory for the Europeans, the Second World War. It was the Europeans lost. I mean, this is why Europe looks the way that it does today. As I complete this summary, the news has just been given that Mr. Griffin of the British National Party has been cleared of racism on his second trial. This news was followed by a statement from Mr. Brown, the Chancellor, who said, "The law will have to be looked at." Need I say any more about what is happening to what was my country? And that's a very good point. He's saying the person has been found not guilty, so they say, "Oh, well, we'll have to change the law to make sure that we do find him guilty next time." And that just sums it all up. That's a very good letter, that one. Let's see what's the next one that I've got highlighted here. From time to time, those in authority give grants to improve one's home. The first question is, are you on benefits? Reply, no, I have saved my money. Then we can't help you. I was stupid enough to believe in the saying, save for a rainy day. Thank goodness my grandson is spending his money on the things he wants and does not save. The government will look after him and his family. As for children, I was allowed to wander freely, unaccompanied, through fields, meadows, country lanes, and woods, without fear. Nowadays, children are assaulted and dumped naked in a snow-covered alley. Many children no longer show respect to their elders, e.g. school teachers attacked and sworn at, children referring to adults by their first names, putting themselves on an equal footing with adults, an unheard-of thing when I was younger. I have a niece in her 60s who cannot break the habit of calling me uncle, yet a 10-year-old child calls me by my first name, of which I distinctly disapprove. As for greed, we were satisfied for Christmas and birthday presents with the simple things in life, but today's children require expensive computers, digital cameras, Game Boys, and other expensive things. It's an important point there that he makes, that when he was a child, he was able to play in fields, meadows, country lanes and woods without fear. But the country that he grew up in was 100% white. The country that children grow up in now is only 80% white. And in the suburbs and the cities, it could only be 50% white. And it's very dangerous out there. And this is why the children aren't able to go out and play anymore, because of how dangerous it is, because they live in a multicultural country now. Things like what it says here, children are assaulted and dumped naked in a snow-covered alley. Children are groomed and just dumped in the middle of Yorkshire moors as a punishment for going against their groomers, as was one of the cases with these grooming gangs. It continues, when I was younger, capital punishment existed, so no murderer committed the same offence twice. With the abolishment of capital punishment, mass murders take place as there is no fear of dire consequences. When caught, it is a life free of worry, in a prison full of luxuries, games rooms, television, etc., free meals and no money worries. Is it any wonder we have a gun and knife culture? Hardly a week goes by without some media story of shooting or stabbing, sometimes of innocent people by mistake. And I would have to query that. I would say that if we had a 100% white country and you had prisons that were focused on rehabilitation, which is why you have games rooms, televisions, I think you would be able to rehabilitate people. The reason why we have guns and knife crime is multiculturalism. There's not much gun and knife crime went on in Iceland when it was 100% Icelandish, which was up until a couple of years ago. And now Iceland is multicultural and they have murders there. They never even used to have a murder. One murder a year. They didn't used to have one. I think they had two murders in the first or second year that they diversified and brought in multiculturalism. That's the reason for the gun and the knife culture. Not because they concentrate on rehabilitation in the prisons. And I speak of that from experience of being in prison. In the army, I was given a gun and a knife for my own protection. But after the war, these were handed back as I had no further use for them. And of course, prisoners get compensation if anyone infringes their human rights, regardless of the fact that their victims have no human rights. Talking about having a knife there, when I was a child, I used to have a sheath knife, and I used to have it attached to my belt, and it used to go everywhere with me. And would have a sheath knife on, go up the pub. It wasn't until the late 80s that they said that you couldn't actually carry a knife around with you. I mean, it's one of the most fundamental human tools that there is a knife. But if you're going to live in a multicultural society, there will be people there that will use the knife as a weapon rather than as a tool. And that's the reason why you're not allowed to carry a knife anymore. So if you need to cut a piece of string or cut a bit of cloth or do some repairs, you just can't do it because you're not allowed to carry a knife around with you anymore. I mean, it was a very useful tool to have. And that's just another instance of what happens with multiculturalism. You're no longer able to use the tools that all your ancestors did for thousands of years. In my younger days, before this liberated society, if a girl became pregnant, she was sent far away to look after a sick relative until after the baby was born and adopted. Now we hear about umpteen teen pregnancies, many involving school pupils. And of course they said, well, the reason, what we need to do to stop this is we need to have better sex education. And the more sex education they taught their children, the more pregnancies, teenage pregnancies that they got. And they normalised it. And instead of the baby being born and adopted, which sort of prevented young women from getting pregnant out of marriage. So of course, there were some, but very, very few. And it meant that pretty much all children were born into a family that was going to last, and they had a stable family foundation on which for the child to grow. Whereas nowadays, it's a horrendous divorce rate, and so many children come from broken homes. It's absolutely devastating for a child to see that their parents split up. So it was to prevent that from happening. It was to prevent there being broken homes from children. That's why children or your unmarried mothers would have the child taken off them and adopted. It was so that they would make sure that they got married when they had a child, and they stayed married because they were putting the rights of the child first, which I think is the right way to be. Children are innocent and they need caring for, that they're unable to do things for themselves. The rights of the child should always come first. Whereas in the modern world, we put the rights of the woman ahead of the rights of the child. And this is why we allow abortion. And this is why we have these broken homes. And this is why we condemn this idea of children being taken and adopted from a mother that gets pregnant outside of marriage. In old films, even married couples were not allowed to be seen in the same bed. It had to be separate beds with a bedside table separating them. In this liberated society, every soap opera has couples, single, married, or adulterous, apparently performing the sex act. We are often warned some programmes contain strong language. Don't they mean obscene or foul language? They think that in that great film Gone with the Wind, the film's censors warned that they must not use swear words, so they wanted to cut out the immortal final line, "Quite frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn." It contained a swear word. That was when we thought that damn was swearing. There seems to be a new breed of solicitors springing up all over the country, the no-win, no-fee type. If someone is clumsy enough to trip outside, it is a case for compensation. And what happened to the once proud claim, made in Britain? Now everything I buy is made in China. When I hear someone singing, "What a Wonderful World," I wonder what planet they are living on. Possibly Cuckoo Land or some fool's paradise. Well, I have got that off my chest, so I wonder if I qualify for grumpy old men. Good luck. Yours faithfully, Anon. P.S. I prefer to remain anonymous, as I like the shape of my car as it is, and I cannot afford to replace broken windows. So you can see 20 years ago, people found out that you were critical of modern society. You could have your car vandalised. And he's saying he would rather remain anonymous. And of course, today, when people go out and protest, nationalists go out to protest, they want to wear a mask because they want to remain anonymous, because they're fearful of the attacks that they might suffer from for voicing their opinion and voicing their views. And they're fearful of intimidation and violence. And the same as this elderly man, fearful of intimidation and violence, if his views were made known. Let's have a look at another one. Looking back over the last 60 years, I am utterly disappointed with the country at the moment. And unless something substantial be forthcoming, this country will degenerate even further. Yes, degenerate. This is not the country which my colleagues fought for. And I feel ashamed at the state of affairs now upon us. I agree that a lot has been achieved, but at what cost? Our currency has been devalued, directly to my knowledge, 3 times. But still the pound is nowhere it should be on the money markets. Consequently, everything we have bought has been heavily inflated, especially the cost of housing. We are given a lot of hooey about supply and demand, yet even now prices are still rising on property. This, in my opinion, is scandalous, as it does not give the younger people any encouragement to own their houses unless they are able to take out mortgages far and above their normal commitments. I feel estate agents are largely to blame here, despite what they might say. And I say, well, it's part of the system that we have with usury, that allows usury, and this is why you get a continual inflation. Years ago, you didn't have this. And if you look in the classical world, however much silver was worth, an ounce of silver, it was worth the same a century later, 2 centuries later. In the Bible, everything is stable. There is no inflation. Inflation is a modern thing that comes about from usury being in the system, basically. It's unnatural usury. The cost of food in general is appalling. No suggestions on help is forthcoming from higher authorities to encourage us to grow our own food wherever practicable. This happened during the war, but was never kept up. They say that you don't need to have a garden now to grow your own food. Now that they've imported so many people from elsewhere, we haven't got enough room for everybody to have a garden and grow their own food. But that is something that everybody used to do. Having met quite a lot of people of my own age, they have all agreed that this country has not turned out as they would have wished. We were all proud to be British, whether we lived in Scotland, Wales or Ireland, but not any longer. We are shocked to see the number of foreigners in our country, with possibly more to come. Imagine if you could see the world today. I think it was about 90% white 20 years ago. Now it's only 75% white. We feel enough is enough. This does not mean we should kick them out, but encourage them to return to their own countries to help build up their own resources. And of course, that is what patriotic alternatives say. It's what a lot of ethno-nationalists say. You don't need to kick these people out. They just need encouragement. If we just remove the laws that we have in place to favour these people, got rid of the anti-white system, the two-tier system, made everything equal, everything in English. So if you don't speak English, you're not going to get an interpreter for a start. If we just had laws that did not penalise the white man, all of these things would encourage people of foreign ancestry to go back to their ancestral homelands. And you could also offer them money as well, quite generous amounts of money to go back. Not illegal immigrants, of course. I mean, that would be absolutely ridiculous, which is, of course, what the government suggested they were going to do. Illegal immigrants who are going to be offered £3,000 to go back. So they literally just have to get over here on a boat, get on the shore, collect their £3,000, and then go back home again. You can't do it to illegal immigrants, but if you were to offer a decent sum of money to legal migrants that were already here, and you were to implement these other changes in laws, I think there would be quite a lot of them that took up voluntary repatriation, especially if the amount of money was £10,000 or £15,000. I mean, they could set up a business in their ancestral homeland. They could go back there and be far better off than they actually are in Britain. Regarding all those who lost their lives in the Second World War, I'm sure they would be ashamed the way the country has become. We have certainly had a variety of governments over the years, none of which could be recommended. The mess we are in is awful, and we are continually told improvements will be forthcoming in the future. What a hope. The NHS is in turmoil. The Home Office is a shambles, and no improvements for an overall policy on transport facilities have come to light. Again, you should look at what it's like today, what the NHS waiting lists are like today, waiting for 2 years for an operation. Look at the Home Office. I think he'd have a heart attack if he could see the Home Secretary and the ethnic makeup of the Home Office today. What we need today is a leader of the nation, like we had during the war, where obstacles were overcome and progress was made. We had to have this as we were fighting for our very existence. So why not now? Again, it hammers the point home. The British soldiers that fought in World War II, they were fighting for their existence. They weren't fighting to get rid of Nazism. They weren't fighting to protect democracy. They were fighting because they thought that they would be invaded by foreigners and occupied by foreigners. That was their reason for fighting. As he says here, for their very existence, that's what they were fighting for. Not for a political system, one political system over another. We have leaders of political parties who do not always go with the wishes of the people. Very good speech makers, but not much action. I am not a member of any political party, but even now, the present government are glossing over the cracks so as to offer themselves to be winners at the next general election. If things go on as they are today, I shudder to think what our grandchildren will have to put up with. If only we could stand on our own 2 feet and not run with or run after other countries, This would be more than welcome. And I wonder which country is he referring to there? Is he referring after America? Because, of course, a lot of people see Britain as just following America, effectively. And once you get past that, you realise, yes, but America is controlled by Israel. And America does what Israel wants. And it looks as if the world is following America, but in actual fact, the world is doing whatever is best for Israel. So I wonder whether he was aware of the Zionist influence on politics there, or whether he was just referring to America. And he actually gives his name that one. Yours sincerely, Alfred T. Marsh. Well, that does it for today's look at the Unknown Warriors. We'll look at that some more later on in the year. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with a non-pre-recorded Daily Nationalist. God bless and hail victory.